Cities and states are strapped for cash, so why have they cut back on borrowing money?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson with The Morning Open, a look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the day. Coming up, why has one gauge of borrowing by cities and states reached the lowest point in more than a decade? But first, where's Wall Street? Stocks are down right now. The Dow is down 27 points at 12,186. The NASDAQ down 0.7%, and the S&P 500 down about 0.4%. Today, by the way, is the two-year anniversary of the day the stock market bottomed out. Since then, the Dow's up about 86%. Juice maker Tropicana says it will boost the price of its orange juice by as much as 8%. That's because of the impact this winter's cold weather has had on the crops down in Florida. Now let's get to borrowing by cities and states. Governments often go to the municipal bond market for what are essentially low-cost loans to do big projects like building bridges and schools. But according to new data from Thomson Reuters, municipal bond issuance is on track for its lowest quarter in 11 years. Let's bring in Richard DeKayser, who joins us live each Wednesday. He's an economist at the Parthenon Group. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
So what's going on now with municipal bonds?
Well, there's a few things going on. Market interest rates have increased. That discourages borrowing. States and local governments are also tightening their belts, and that means less spending and also less borrowing. But the biggest factor almost certainly is the end of a federal program called the Build America Bonds Program. And this was part of the stimulus legislation in 2009, which gave generous incentives both to bond issuers and bond investors. And like Cinderella's stagecoach, it expired midnight, December 31st. So a lot of governments front-loaded their borrowing, did so at the final months of last year, and now what we're seeing is the other side of that, which is a dearth of new borrowing.
And Richard, I remember a lot of people saying that if the Build America Bonds program that you talk about went away, which it did on December 31st, that we'd have a disaster in the muni bond market. Is that what's happening right now?
I think calling it a disaster goes a little bit too far. Certainly, it's making things tougher for bond issuers. But the economy's at a different stage of the cycle. We're no longer in the crisis we were 2 years ago. Everyone's having to surrender some of the very generous tax incentives that they had a couple of years ago, and state and local governments are simply one of those constituencies that's going to have to do with a little bit less.
Richard DeKayser, economist at the Parthenon Group, thanks so much as always.
My pleasure.
Well, Sprint and T-Mobile are reportedly talking about a merger. They currently lag behind their larger competitors, AT&T and Verizon. T-Mobile and Sprint stock jumped 4% yesterday on rumors of a merger. So what would all this mean for us cell phone users? Let's bring in Scott Cleland, a telecom analyst with Precursor. Good morning.
Good morning.
So give us the basics. Why would it help these two companies to get together?
Well, there are two big players, AT&T and Verizon, and Sprint and T-Mobile are number three and four. The logic behind this is if you combined T-Mobile and Sprint, they would have more resources in order to provide more to consumers. They'd be able to invest more in their network and be able to get the iPhone and other top products.
Is it all about the iPhone?
I wouldn't say all about the iPhone. I think it's actually about consolidating to have the resources and investment in order to sufficiently compete with AT&T and Verizon.
How would consumers feel a joint Sprint and T-Mobile in the landscape of cell phone service?
Well, I think, long term, they would be getting, more spectrum, they'd be getting more resources. And so I think, consumers of both T-Mobile and Sprint long term would benefit greatly.
What about Verizon and AT&T customers?
They're going to benefit from, a tougher competitor as well. I mean, we have more competition in wireless than almost any country in the world. And some people may look at this and say, is this going to reduce competition? This is a very heavy investment industry, and you have to have the spectrum, and you have to have the infrastructure and the resources to provide a quality service and product. And I think combining makes a ton of sense.
Scott Cleland, a telecom analyst with Precursor, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD as well as online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com. By Microsoft, providing comprehensive business solutions for the cloud. You can learn more at Microsoft.com/cloud. And by Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and Progressive.com.
Next week, the Supreme Court in Bangladesh will decide whether to let a Nobel Peace Prize winner keep his job. Muhammad Yunus is known as the godfather of microfinance for giving small loans to the poor. His idea has helped millions of people work their way out of poverty. But Yunus himself was fired from his position last month because he's past the country's mandatory retirement age. And it's put a big question mark over the future of the microcredit model he created. The BBC's Anbarasan Atirajan has more now from the capital, Dhaka.
Professor Yunus has taken his fight to the Supreme Court in Bangladesh, claiming the government is trying to take control of his Grameen Bank. Debapriya Bhattacharya is an economist at the Center for Policy Dialogue in Dhaka, and he says the sudden departure of Yunus from the bank could impact its stability.
So it is going to affect the overall efficacy of the poverty alleviation efforts.
Meanwhile, the microcredit industry itself is under scrutiny. A number of for-profit microfinance institutions have mushroomed in the last few years, charging very high interest rates and using coercive debt collection methods. The companies claim competition will eventually drive interest rates down. But analysts warn the negative perceptions could ruin the sector. In Dhaka, I'm the BBC's Anbarasan Atirajan for Marketplace.
And finally, have I got a deal for you. It's a 1902 mansion set on 13 acres in beautiful Sands Point, Long Island. And unless you buy it, it's going to be torn down at the end of the month. It's available for the low, low price of $30 million. Now, the maintenance costs are around $4,500 a day. But get this. The house was the inspiration for Daisy Buchanan's house in The Great Gatsby, the one with the green light at the end of the dock. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. On Twitter, at Jeremy Hobson, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Clinical trials are some of the most important and expensive things that drug companies do, so they're outsourcing.
The number one reason why companies come to Russia is that they can enroll patients in Russia anywhere from 3 to 20 times faster than in either North America or Western Europe.
I'm Kai Rizdal. The doctor is in Moscow. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.